So hi and welcome to the first ever Gooners in USA podcast. Today I'm joined by my co-host of the podcast, Mike, and co-creator, so to speak, and we decided to create a podcast dedicated to Arsenal from a US fan's perspective. Our goal for the podcast is to discuss the Arsenal, you know, current matches, and hopefully bring some laughs to our listeners, because we all know we're in need of a good laugh at the moment. So I'll pass it over to Mike, and today we have a guest as well, whose name is George, and I'll let the two of them introduce themselves and tell them a little bit about yourselves, guys.
Yeah, Andy, Mike Feinberg here. I'm from D.C. Been a Gooner since 1989. Was a teenager living in London and kind of sealed the deal on May 26, 1989. It was a good time to be over there, but Michael Thomas pretty much made me an Arsenal fan for life. And that was one of the best days of my life, which my wife and kids probably wouldn't appreciate me saying. But, and I think my goal for this podcast is to just kind of not be over analytical. We're not going to be here breaking down game film and trying to educate people on how the game went. You guys all saw the game. You know exactly how it went. We're just going to give you our feedback and hopefully keep it light and have a good time. So, George, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you've been?
Hey, everybody. I'm George from Boston. I'm here to talk about the breakdown of the game, you know, really get into the analytics and the X's and O's. I am really excited to be joining you guys on this first of your podcast and excited to share a little bit of perspective from Boston.
Excellent. And how did you become an Arsenal fan?
I think I'm one of the many that became an Arsenal fan from playing FIFA in the 90s and just started playing with the Arsenal. And then next thing you know, I was researching the players. And I have a lot of hair now on the top of my head right now. But back then, I always kept a short haircut. And once I got my first Thierry Henry kit, and people started calling me Henry, I just fell in love with the idea. And as a Boston guy, I was very fortunate to get a chance to be at Thierry Henry's last game when the Revolution put his Red Bulls out the pasture. Nice. It was a sad moment, but also good to see him.
Yeah. And so for those of you who have yet don't know George, to best describe his hair, I would say Sideshow Bob.
Yeah.
Cross between Sideshow Bob and maybe Mo Elneny.
Yeah,
or a Marcelo Elneny type of combo,
like mixed with a little bit of Fellaini.
a little bit.
So
all things I've heard before, American Fellaini.
I don't know if that's something that I don't know if that's something I'd be proud of, George.
No. It was actually people in North London making fun of me, and I kind of just turned around and called them on it. And next thing you know, we were all drinking pints together.
I wouldn't be proud of being the Belgian Fellaini, actually, either. So
No.
George is possibly the most traveled American Gooner that I've ever met. He's in Boston right now, but that is the exception rather than the rule. I'm wondering where in the world will George Devaney be next week?
Next week, I will. Well, this week I will be at the home pub at the Lear here in Boston. But in the beginning of September, I'll kick off my travels in Orange County in California, and then the following week in Kansas City, and then looking forward to joining up with the folks in the Queen City, that's Charlotte, North Carolina, to start off October.
Excellent. So I'm Andy. I can't tell from the accent, but I was born and raised in North London. I now live in Denver. My whole family lives back in England, so I go back quite often. Like those guys, I became an Arsenal supporter essentially from birth. It runs in my in my family about 8 generations, minus my dad, who for some reason supports West Ham. And the reason why is because he played for them as a youth, but still a terrible reason altogether. So that's my story. So Mike, George, and I actually met last month during the preseason tour of California. We met in San Jose for the All-Star match, and then we flew down to L.A. Together, and then we went to the Chivas game. So Arsenal America did the superb job of hosting various events across the two cities, and through them and other mutual friends, we met. we actually met pretty early on in the process, maybe back in April, when someone created a big Facebook group and just added all these Gooners from around the country, which was exceptional. But for the better part, you know, we really became friends during that tour. So it was really nice, and it was great of Arsenal America to bring us together. So what I'd like to do for each podcast is we're going to open a question to our panel. And today, as silly as it is, the question is, if you could have dinner with a past or current Arsenal player, who would it be and why? And Mike, we'll kick it off to you.
Well, I've got kind of two categories of answers on this. The serious answer for me would be one of two people. I mean, obviously, Michael Thomas maybe didn't score a lot of goals, but he scored one particular goal that was a formative moment in my life. So I would like to go back and take him out to dinner to thank him for doing that for me. I suppose David Rocastle would also be a another player from that era that I wish I would have had the chance to go after dinner. But as far as if I were looking to have a kind of a fun time and have some banter, me hanging out with Lehman, Bentner, and Abui would probably be a pretty good foursome. But if I had to choose just one person, it'd be Mickey Thomas.
Nice.
Because that food would be up for grabs now.
Right. George?
Mine's easy. I'm going to go with a current Gunner, and that is Miss Alex Scott from the ladies squad. also from the England international squad, former Boston Breaker. I think she's awesome. No, and if I was going to have to go with a guy, I think coming out of the California preseason tour, going into it, I didn't really have much of an opinion of this guy, and I was actually maybe a little sour on him. But the Ox, he really impressed me. He was so funny. Mm-hmm. I just think that he would be a really fun guy to go out with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And George has never actually been out to dinner with a man before, so this was a hard question for him to answer.
It was, yeah. Alex, I almost wanted to call her Alexandria or something, just to be clear.
And so for me, it'd be Ian Wright. And I remember growing up just admiring him on and off the pitch. And like for me particularly, there was a VHS tape where, you know, they celebrate the Ian Wright goals, and it was his the season after he had reached the all-time goal scoring record. And I remember watching him watching his goals, and he was like wedged between a sofa and this glass table just sitting on the ground, and all these other people were like on these chairs, and he was just sitting there, and he just seemed like a proper lad. And I just thought, like, he just doesn't take life seriously. And I just love the fact that today he remains a diehard fan. And if you follow him on Twitter, or you watch him or listen to him on BBC, he has the same views as all of us. And he's as frustrated as all of us. And he doesn't let, you know, his relationship or past with the club step in line with his decision making or whatever he wants to say. He'll just say it. And I absolutely love that about him. So, so that's who I'd like to have dinner with. But,
yeah, just make sure it's bring his son.
What?
I like him. Just make sure he doesn't bring his son, because he's not welcome at that dinner.
Oh, okay. Mike doesn't like his son.
Mike doesn't like kids.
Oh, come on. Bradley Wright Phillips does not need to be at a dinner.
Oh, you're talking about, yeah, that's, I suppose. So let's go over to the match of the week. So Leicester City away. I think we can all agree that playing the defending champions, who were desperate for a win in front of the home crowd, week two of the season was always going to be a hard match. And, you know, I was texting with Mike during pretty much after the match. And for me, a big standout, not only were our gaping holes within the match, but instantly I turned to Rob Holding and Koscielny in defense. And I thought, okay, the speed of Leicester, having essentially an American term here, but a rookie center back, we're going to get absolutely annihilated. And in my opinion, I thought he held his own and did pretty decent.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned right after the game that I thought he looked a bit inexperienced, but clearly I saw a lot of feedback from people. I went back and watched the game. Like I said, I'm not a game expert, not a tactical expert. Koscielny was obviously massive in that game. And, you know, when you break it down, we did keep a clean sheet against a team that, you know, maybe they're struggling a little bit so far this season, but they can clearly score goals and expose an inexperienced defense. And, you know, when I watched the game for the second time, I was really watching for Rob Holding and changed my tune a little bit. I think he did play far better than he did the first week. And that partnership didn't look too bad. And a clean sheet against Leicester on the road is never a bad thing.
Let me jump in here. I had the good fortune of going down to watch with the crew of Arsenal, the folks down in New Orleans for this match, and watching on the big screen, got a chance to catch up with people that I had just met in California, also people that I'd known from the Arsenal universe beforehand. Big shout out to Matt and Colin, Omar, Alfredo, those guys. And it was, you know, the atmosphere in the pub was very kind of antsy going into it. You know, they named their event The Sky is Falling. And so I think everyone was a little bit on edge. But afterwards, maybe it was just the New Orleans and the fact that you can just pour your drinks into plastic cups and just head on out whenever you're ready. But everyone seemed pretty, like, pleased with the result. I think, you know, the one thing that really stood out for me was how quick the game changed once Mesut Ozil checked in.
Yeah. I think, you know, when him and Jack came on, it was clearly a swing in play. And do you guys feel like we maybe brought them, the two of them, on maybe a little too late? I feel like we could have maybe, I know we're holding Ozil back a little bit because he's of the risk of injury, but Jack, I think, could have come on 10, 15 minutes sooner and created that explosive move forward that we know he can do. But, you know, do you guys think we brought them on too late, or are we just kind of conserving them for Watford this weekend?
You know, I definitely think that they were brought on too late, and you never know what's going on with the fitness behind the scenes. I mean, if Koscielny was ready to start and play 90 minutes, I mean, he's the one that played most recently of the three of them. So you'd think Ozil will be ready, but, you know, again, you never know. I don't know whether they have fitness people telling them exactly how many minutes they can and can't play, but I don't see what the difference is between 20 and 30 minutes. Maybe that's just me. So, yeah, I think they not only came on too late, but I think they came in for the wrong people. The guys that Wenger brought off didn't seem to be the guys that were really holding us back, bringing off Chambo and Xhaka instead of Coquelin with his yellow card and Walcott. I think that could be questioned, but, you know, who am I?
But when you think about all the things that we know about Arsene Wenger, what he did for this club by coming in and changing fitness routines and changing diet, especially you hear the stories from the old guys about, you know, lots of cigarettes and booze and not a lot of fitness, you can only imagine how much he pays attention to the physios about, you know, how much time, you know, people should have out on the pitch when they're just coming back from the summer. I tend to think these are, you know, people in their early 20s, get the hell out there. But, you know, that's just me.
Well, and if you look at Ramsey, right, he's in the same boat with Koscielny, and Ozil basically played within the same week at the Euros. We bring him back, play him week one. Now he's sitting on the sideline for 6 weeks with a hamstring injury. So, you know, I feel like, yeah, they are 20-something years old. They should be ready to go. But clearly, and it's different case by case, right? But I do feel like, you know, we rush Ramsey, and maybe we wouldn't have if we knew Cazorla and Jack were 100% ready to go. But
that's just the curse, though. I mean, maybe they should go back to smoking and drinking and that sort of thing, because I don't remember this kind of injury curse going on in the early, you know, in the early teams that we have now. So, you know, playing 20 minutes versus 30, playing 1 week before the other, it just doesn't seem to matter. People are just going to get injured when you play for Arsenal teams.
Well, we need a goalie that can smoke some cigarettes.
I know, right? Didn't he have one of those? I don't know if you guys watched the Roma game yesterday, but my God, did he let in some awful goals.
I can only imagine.
Yeah,
I've heard about it.
Yeah, I thought to myself, Ospina would never let those in. Czech would certainly never let those in, but Ospina wouldn't have let him. So I think that was a decent move.
But on that real quick, I got to say both matches so far this season, although young, I've been impressed with Cech. I don't think that there was any of the goals in week one that were his fault. No. And I thought he played really well this past week.
No,
Some of the saves he made this week, I mean, just absolutely changed the game and saved the game for us.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end.
And him and Koscielny, like you said, I mean, they've got to be massive units out there. You know, it's sad when you think of Bellerin being as young as he is, and you're like, well, in the defense, he's kind of a senior player, right? Because he's been just playing week after week. But, you know, we talk about the back, but let's go to the front. I mean, it's blindingly obvious that Alexis is not fit to be a solo striker. I mean,
yeah. Can we? But real quick, I just want to go back to the massive units you discussed.
I was speaking of massive units.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alexis. I don't really know what to say about him. I'm a little salty about him right now.
And like, why are you salty? Like, tell us your salt level and why you're salty.
Well, I thought that he was absolutely brilliant two seasons ago. And this past season, I felt like maybe it was just so many minutes and his, you know, first Christmas of, you know, getting through his first Christmas, which, you know, the first one, he was really intense throughout. I just didn't think he was that good last season. I thought he was great, but I didn't think he was, you know, lived up to what I had hoped. And then this summer he goes out gangbusters and, you know, plays amazing for country. But I want more from him.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't think that he's had the opportunity to get a proper rest, though. Because last summer he had Copa, this summer he has Copa. And I think Arsene finally said to him, and maybe the ankle injury helped, saying 4 weeks off. And he doesn't seem like the type of player that doesn't want to play. And like you said, getting through Christmas is tough. And, right. You know, he gives it 110% each game. And so not having the ability to take that rest or listen to his manager to say, and I think Wenger's even said it in press conferences, like, he does not want to be benched. And I right. think that he needs to listen, and like you pointed out before, like, Arsene knows and brought in this regime of rest, rest, rest. We need to say to him, like, just chill out for a little bit and take the bench. But for me, when you watch him up front, he does so much work, but he keeps dropping back and he receives the ball. And then you're thinking, well, there's no one for him to go to. There's no Giroud type of player to use as an outlet for a give and go or what have you. And then he's so used to drifting to the left and right. You often, like, there's a couple times you see him on top of one of the wingers and you just think to yourself, you know, there's this gaping hole that we're all seeing. Why isn't someone filling it?
All right, so I just want to point out he's on top of wingers with gaping holes and a massive unit. Where exactly are you watching the game, Andy? At a strip club? I mean, this is crazy. We'll get used to this with Alexis because next summer he's got the Confederations Cup and the year after that the World Cup. It's not going to get any less, any more restful for him during the summer. I think he's just kind of – he's caught, and he's not used to being the end-all, be-all for a team. I mean, he certainly never was for Barcelona. I suppose he probably was, prior to that in Italy. But this current version of Alexis needs to be rested every once in a while. He needs to be played where he's accustomed playing, just like Ozil needs to be played where he's accustomed playing. And, you know, Alexis seems most comfortable either on the wing or up front with a second striker like Vargas. And I don't know if, Arsene's not going to go to a 4-4-2 and have him up there with Giroud, I suppose. So until we get a regular rotation up front and get that massive unit that everyone keeps talking about, Alexis, I think, is going to be kind of on again, off again. And I just hope the pressure doesn't get to him and drive him out of town.
Well, and I will say, so I read the book Leading by Sir Alex Ferguson, and it's a great book for someone who is business-minded, and a lot of his examples come from the football world and how he dealt with certain situations. But there was a chapter in there where he talks about managing talent, and there was a short paragraph where he mentions world-class players, and he said for him, Ronaldo, Messi, they're world-class. You don't put anyone else currently in the game in that world-class. He said, just outside of that bubble is Alexis Sanchez. And he said what he would have given to coach Alexis Sanchez. And he even commented, because the book was written just recently, the fact that he's at Arsenal and that Arsene has him as a weapon is huge for not only the club, but for the league as well to have such talent. So you hear someone of his echelon say that about him. For me, my expectation now is, and it always has been, the guy needs to drop greatness every match. And we see it in the Liverpool game, that Man United game, where he just all of a sudden steps up and can change the match. But we need to see that consistently week after week.
Yeah, and when he's filling in spots because of other people not being where they're supposed to be, or injuries, or mm-hmm. or depth issues, he just doesn't seem to be that transcendent that he can take the team and put them on his back like a Ronaldo or a Messi can. And that's I guess why he's a step below the world class for Fergie. And that's where the position we keep putting him in is to have to take the team and strap him to his back, and he wants to do it, but I'm not sure he can.
So that's why I wonder if Arsene steps up and buys that world class striker that we've obviously been missing since Van Persie left, and then the majority of our key players are healthy, and you put Alexi out on the left or the right, we'll probably see the best out of him, right? Because we get to see him work off of other world class talent, but that doesn't seem like it's going to be happening anytime soon.
The window's still open.
The window is still open, and we'll discuss that here in a little bit. But back to the match itself, do you guys feel, and obviously Leicester, they always say defending a title is the hardest thing to do, and let's be honest, they're not. Even Ranieri said there's a better chance of a UFO landing in London than them retaining the title. But do you feel like they came into this match playing for a draw, or do you think, hey, he said to them, let's go out and get those 3 points? Because it seemed like they were playing for a draw, in my opinion.
I don't necessarily think so. I mean, they certainly seemed to try to attack. I didn't really see them, and again, I didn't see them dropping back and stacking people behind the ball. It certainly didn't seem like they were going all out, but I mean, Vardy tried to make some runs. There's some questions as to whether he was pulled down or not. I mean, they seemed to be going for it. I didn't really get the impression that they were playing for a draw. Perhaps once we made our late game subs with 15 or 17 minutes left in the game, at that point when they saw how the game was turning, they may have adopted a more defensive posture and said, we got to get, you know, 1 point out of this. But certainly for the I don't think that was their strategy going in.
Yeah, I agree. I think that towards the end of the game, they definitely dropped back. But going in, I think that they still believe, especially with the big money that they've started to splash to retain their guys, that they wanted 3 points out of this and a kind of get right game after the falling on their face week one. I predict nothing for them, and they'll like it.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about those penalties. I mean, two of those both of them look like penalties. What did you guys think? Because you listened to, like, we obviously, for those who are listening overseas, or maybe my mom who lives in England will probably listen to this, but
at least be able to get our moms to listen to this.
Right? So we get NBC coverage, and they cut right to the studio, and there's two Robbies, Musto, and I forget the other guy's name, but both of them were pretty much raging at each other, that one penalty, no penalty. So how did you guys see it? Because I saw it as a penalty.
Well, I think the man of the match, I mean, Koscielny certainly deserves consideration for the man of the match, but my man of the match for this match was Mark Clattenburg. I mean, he was far and away our best player of the game. I think we would have lost probably 2-0 to two penalties if it wasn't for him. And, I mean, I got to give him props. I mean, he's having an amazing run. He what did he do, the FA Cup final, Champions League, Euro?
Yeah,
and then he single-handedly got us a point on Sunday. So I think Mark Clattenburg is now the leader in the clubhouse.
You're actually wrong. Clattenburg was playing defense for Arsenal. That was Koscielny as the ref. And you're also my man of the match is the person that would have saved your mystical two penalties. Mr. Peter Cech with his magic hat would have stopped those and retained the point for us. So he's my man of the match, and I say no penalty.
Yeah, I do think they were both penalties. The second one more so than the first. I mean, I heard the Robbies going back and forth about Musa's penalty, but you know what? the way I see it, if you get your body in position where the only thing a guy can do is bring you down from behind, I think that's the way you're supposed to play the position. And was it Bellerin that brought him down?
Yeah, I
think that was a penalty, and I was just biting my fingernails waiting for Clattenburg to hook us up again, and I never thought he would, but he did.
So
I will say this on the penalty thing. I do think it's interesting that somehow Coughlin remained in the game.
Oh, totally. But here's a stat, and I don't know if it's 100% accurate, but I heard that Clattenburg has awarded Arsenal 10 penalties in his refereeing career, and he's never given a penalty against us.
Which
good
is
man.
It's I always thought he was one of the Mike Dean and Howard Webb sorts, but he can ref every game as far as I'm concerned. There's a reason he's in the Euro final.
Right.
And it's because he is apparently an Arsenal supporter. But I talked to a ton of people last year talking about how the only reason we weren't in the lead in the league or challenging was because of referee conspiracies against us. That is just bogus. Certainly there are times where it appeared that way, but I'm a believer in the law of large numbers. And over the course of a season, unless you have corruption, and I don't believe there's corruption, I think it all evens out. But this game, it evened out completely in our favor, in my opinion.
Mike, there's an example where there is refereeing that's terrible, and even in large numbers, and it's called the MLS.
Oh, absolutely. That's a different story. That's a level of competence. I don't think anyone's talking about confidence in the Premier League.
Well, since we don't have a beer sponsor yet, I won't mention what beer I was drinking in New Orleans. But unlike you guys, I did not see any of the studio stuff, and so I didn't see the beef between the Robbies on the penalties. But us in New Orleans, we were firmly drinking and saying no penalty.
I'll always say no penalty against the Arsenal, but then when you watch it back, and again, in slow motion, completely different story, right? But Clattenburg was in good position both times and said no both times, and it wasn't like he was making up calls. So I guess,
there's only one Mark Clattenburg.
There is. Do you think he has an Arsenal tattoo? He apparently got the tattoo of the Champions League trophy and the Euro trophy on his arm, so I wonder if he's got an Arsenal one on like his lower back or something.
Yeah, it's probably a tramp stamp thing where only certain people will ever be able to see it.
Yeah,
he actually has a Jamie Foxx tattoo. That's
does he? Nice. So, any other talking points from the match? I mean, I know that we're not going to get too specific with the X and O's, but anything else that kind of besides those two gaping holes and not bringing the master Ozil on quicker? Anything else?
Yeah, I said I wasn't going to break down game film, but I did. I did write down a couple of things. I don't mean to sound like I was rooting for Leicester in this game because I wasn't. But I mean that ball from Mahrez to Vardy in the first half, the one that eventually led to the first potential penalty, the waiting on that ball and the understanding between the two of them is unbelievable. I mean, if you go back, it's in the 42nd minute, and watch that ball to Vardy, it's just sublime, and I would love to see that kind of an understanding between two players this year. We'd have to have a consistent lineup in order to get that, but it was just amazing. And I think if it wasn't a penalty by Koscielny, it was a great job in getting back and kind of scrambling to get in the way of what was it, Huth, that he brought down.
Yeah.
And then he did it again in the second half. He bailed Xhaka out. I mean, granted, Xhaka made one of the worst back passes I've ever seen, and I think it was Vardy. I don't remember who it was in on goal again, and Koscielny just got back and got back just enough so that his shot kind of had to go off base, and if not for that, I think Cech might have been left hung out to dry.
Right.
So Koscielny, amazing. I'm getting a little nervous about Coquelin. I mean, it's reminding me of years past where we had center midfielders who just would get stupid red cards and cost us. I mean, he's already done it once, at least once in a North London derby last season. Is it both games this year? He's had an early yellow card and then been on razor's edge for the whole rest of the game. I mean, that's starting to become a trend that I think is a little dangerous, and as good and physical and his leadership as he is, you know, when is the first red card going to come, or when is the first yellow card accumulation going to come? I think we need to start look at Elneny and Xhaka in there.
Well, I was just about to say, I mean, Xhaka's got a pretty big record of red cards, but for me, I love the Coquelin, his passion for the club. But I think when Elneny, Xhaka, Cazorla, and Ramsey are fit, I don't think Coquelin gets in that first team. And not to say he's not a great player, but you're right. He's prone to the yellows early, so it stops the way he plays. But honestly, I think when Xhaka gets up to speed, seems like he's still struggling a little bit with English. But I think when him and Elneny get that partnership going, I don't see Coquelin getting into the starting 11.
Well, you know, I don't know. Wenger didn't take Xhaka out instead of Coquelin in the game so that he could go to English lessons. I didn't quite understand that decision. It didn't come back to haunt us. No. But, you know, anytime he gets a yellow, it's going to be a hard rest of the game to watch. And what is with Theo Walcott? And I hesitate to even say his name right now, but he has been doing better on defense than he has in the attacking third. I've never seen him come back so much. And in fact, he dispossessed a couple of Leicester players, one of which was late in the game. He made a pretty hard shoulder-to-shoulder challenge, which Clattenburg, of course, heroically didn't call a foul, and I don't think it was a foul. But, I mean, his positional awareness in defense seems to be better than his positional awareness in one of the two positions that he professes to be a player in.
Well, so very, very Danny Welbeck, actually, tracking back.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that maybe he's improved on, it's his willingness to track back, but I'm not sure it makes up for his awful deficiencies up front.
Well, and I don't even know if it's him deciding to track back, because if you look at games where we play teams with speed, I mean, look at Barcelona last year in the Champions League. The Ox, before he got injured, I think right around halftime, he was basically back with the left and right back covering Neymar. And so I just wonder, when we play teams with speed, if Wenger's saying to them, hey, one of the two of the wingers has got to come back. And I wonder if Theo is just so horrendous everywhere else on the pitch, he thinks, well, I can at least go stand in someone's way. But you're right. I mean, credit to him, he played decent. But I don't think you're ever going to find me being a Theo Walcott fan. And I'll bite my tongue if he puts 30 into the back of the net this season, but I don't see it happening.
30 goals?
Yeah.
He's not putting 30 goals.
That's why I said I would bite my tongue, but I'm not going to. Because when he scored that goal against Liverpool, everyone was, this is his season. And I was just like, all right, let's pump the brakes. This is one of his five goals he's going to score this season, right?
Yeah. On the heels of a missed PK. Yeah,
exactly. And let's talk about that for a quick minute. Like, you've got Alexis Sanchez. Why didn't he step up? He took the game-winning penalty kick in the Copa America final, right? Why isn't he stepping up and taking that? Like, why is Theo grabbing that ball and saying, I'm the PK taker? Like, I don't get it.
Because he's oblivious to his own qualities or lack thereof, I guess. I you know, we talked about it in the pub, watching the game in Arlington. Who's going to take the penalty? Because it did seem like they didn't have the camera on the person holding the ball. So it was a good 30, 40 seconds in between. And we went between three or four of the players that were on there, because all of the people that you would normally, I mean, Arteta wasn't there to take the penalty, obviously. Santi wasn't on the field. And Giroud wasn't in. So, most of us thought Alexis would take it. But there was Theo with the ball, and we all pretty much rolled our eyes and said, this is the moment that we give up on him. And we gave up on him. And then a minute later, he scored. So,
yeah,
that's Theo.
Yeah. I will say, sorry, George, go ahead.
We've had the same exact reaction, same exact thing happened in Boston at the Lear, is what you described, Mike. It was everyone kind of debating it, then ultimate, like, this is it for Theo, and then everyone turned on him, and then, a minute later.
I will say a quick Theo story. So when we were in California, we were walking through San Jose, and we went to a fan event that George and Mike actually got to go up on stage with some of the players. We'll talk about that at another time. But after the event, the players were coming back. My friend Justin and I were walking down the street, and we saw the Ox and Xhaka get out of like a mini little people carrier, and they were walking into the hotel, and so we stopped and we got some pictures, we got some autographs with them, and then this team bus pulls up. So we're thinking, all right, the team's going to come out. So we wait maybe 10, 15 minutes, and then one by one the players are coming down. And we were standing by the entranceway, and so they stopped. They were signing, taking pictures for us. And all the players made sure they got kind of through and tried to hit as many people as they could, except for Theo. He walked out, kept walking. While players were signing, a player or someone yelled over to him, "Hey, Theo, can you come sign my shirt?" He said, "Sorry, I'm running late," and just walked to the bus. And I thought, that epitomizes Theo Walcott. You know,
anybody say anything to him at that point?
I did say something to him, yes.
And we'll save that for another podcast.
Yes, I did say something to him, but
we'll save that for the podcast where we surprise you by having Theo as a guest, and you have to revisit that time.
Yeah, because I'm sure he'll remember.
He was off the PK practice, actually. He had to hurry up and get there.
But you know, seriously, but for me, that just kind of put him on just another level of just pure hatred for me. And you know, you see someone like Nacho, who a woman was in his ear like, "Nacho, we've got to go, we're running behind," and he literally hit every single person he could, and took a picture with every single person. And the Ox was the same, and then Theo just walks out and does that. And I was just thinking, man, you've got people who flew around the world to come and see you, flew around the US to come and see you, and you can't spend 3 to 5 minutes just scribbling on a piece of paper or someone's shirt. I mean,
too full for the room,
dude. It just really irked me, and that's why I yelled that he sucked, and he looked back in my direction.
But and not as though he agreed with you.
No, he totally didn't. But like you said, he was focused on penalty kicks, and I gotta give him credit. If he had tunnel vision, you know, you can't get someone out of that when they're super focused.
Exactly. All right, so enough of that game.
No, yeah. So we sit 1 point out of six, and the question that I'm going to ask you guys, you see the Chelsea's, United's, and City's winning, the way that they're playing, are we going to be capable of keeping up with them with the squad that we have right now? Because those three teams look good. All three have brand new managers, and there's an atmosphere and a buzz around those three teams that I wish we could have at the Emirates, but are we going to be able to keep up?
Yes.
And why?
Oh, I gotta explain myself too. Well, first of all, they all have to play us. They all have to play the mighty Arsenal. No, but I just feel like this team is not complete yet. We haven't seen. I mean, that week 1-11 was absolutely not the best that we can put out there. This past week, we saw flashes of what we can be when we're a complete roster, but. I just think that I'm still holding out hope that there's going to be another signing, a signing that we can integrate into the team over the next 6 weeks, hopefully, like really well, and just keep pace until Christmas. And I still feel like this is a team that can contend for the top of the table.
Absolutely.
Obviously, we've learned that 5-point deficit after 2 weeks means very little, but the way that these other teams have reloaded, and not just with players, but with attitude and direction from their coaches. I mean, last year, teams reloaded in the summer, a lot of really bad transfers, as it turned out, but the coaching was completely in flux. I think we had Mourinho, who had overstayed his welcome, as always. We had LVG, who started off the year not the biggest fan of his own team. And those teams just, you know, Liverpool did what Liverpool did. I mean, the whole thing just fell apart for a lot of teams. That isn't going to happen this season, in my opinion, because they brought on quality players and quality coaches. And, you know, we've seen, obviously, the top teams have not dropped a point yet. And I say the top teams because I know that Tottenham dropped some points. But I think it's going to be very hard, which is why it was so important to start this season off full strength with depth to the best that we could have. And I don't know if we're going to be able to keep up with Pep and Jose, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm nervous about it, but like you've said, the top teams, and granted, who have they played, right? So,
yeah.
You know, we see this weekend City are playing West Ham, and so there's a lot of money coming into the Premier League. And if you look at West Ham, I see them as a club that are going to be jumping to fight for that top six. Bilic is a great manager, and they've made some good signings. And then you see that the Scum are playing Liverpool, and Liverpool go ahead and play worldly against us and then lose to Burnley. Don't know what the hell's going on there, but you're right. They haven't played anyone, and like George said, hopefully when we do face them, we do get some points. But let's be honest, guys. Is Arsene really going to beat Zlatan and Jose? I mean, his record against both of them is just atrocious.
Yeah, yeah. Different stories, though. And just to build on your point, Andy, I mean, Man City, Stoke is one of my predictions to be to officially definitely relegated this year. And they trounced them. What does that really mean?
Sure.
And the record against those other managers, is that's just a whole other world. So I think it's a brand new fresh slate with them. Granted, you're right. There is a new energy with those clubs, but they haven't played anybody yet. We actually had a pretty interesting first two matches.
No, we did. We did. I mean, we had the hardest first two matches of any team in the league. And you know, everyone can say, well, Leicester's Leicester, but they're still buzzing. You know, I mean, they're coming off. They've got that gold patch on their arm. They're the champions, and so I would say to walk away with a point away at Leicester is a good result. Should we be getting three? Yeah, we're the Arsenal. We should be getting three. But getting a point away at the defending champions, I think, is huge. So looking at we have a week left. Transfer window shuts. We have a gaping hole at center back. We have a gaping hole at striker. We knew 6 weeks ago when Per went out, we needed coverage. Then Gabriel went out, and we thought, okay, it's preseason. We can panic a little bit. Well, we've got some time, right? We got a week for the window. We keep hearing these stories about Mustafi. Today, the most recent from Sky Sports is he met with Valencia and told them he wants to leave. Valencia said, as long as we come in and pay the right amount, they'll let him go. Sounds like that's a done deal, as long as they're not asking for the $50 million that's being sprouted around. And then,
yep, a deal.
You know, I feel like, hey, you're getting a German World Cup winner in Mustafi, who has a partnership with and friendship with a lot of our players on our squad. So that would be a great player to bring in and fill that hole. And then, I don't know if you guys have read about this Lucas Perez, but man, it's gathering a lot of traction over in Spain. Like, all of the major news outlets are saying, as early maybe as tomorrow, Deportivo La Coruña's Lucas Perez could be an Arsenal player, 27-year-old striker, last season, 17 goals, 8 assists, which, I mean, considering in a rather weak Deportivo side, but do you guys feel we should be giving Chuba an opportunity in a run in these games as an out-and-out striker now that Giroud's coming back? Do we feel like, hey, you know what? We've got some coverage there. I mean, Mike, what are your feelings? What do you think we should be doing in this transfer market?
Oh, transfer market. My God, I've given more time and effort and heartache to this. It's just so obnoxious every year. I wish it would end. I don't believe one day or to the next that we're getting Mustafi, not getting Mustafi. I just don't know with Arsene anymore. I obviously think that we need what everybody said that we need. We need another center back, and we need a goal scoring striker, or at the very least somebody that can be kind of molded into that, like Draxler or Griezmann would have been. Although I'm hearing stories that Wenger was actually turned down by the board to try to sign Griezmann. But believe what you want to believe. I just don't have any faith that it's going to get done. Please prove me wrong, Arsene. But you know, there's a name for, you know, the type of person who had their day at the cutting edge like Arsene did, and you know, suddenly start disregarding how things evolve in the world. And you know, they're stubborn, but they believe in things that should be done the same way, even though the rest of the world is growing around them. And they're called Amish people. And there's nothing wrong with being Amish, but I just don't know that I want our coach to have that approach to the transfer market, and you know, try to be churning butter in a candlelit room while everybody else is going out and signing players. So
yeah, George, what
really,
do you say?
Really,
you say,
no, really, no offense to the Amish. I have some of my best friends are Amish.
Yeah, this is the Rumspringa portion of our show.
Exactly. I don't want to get shunned.
You're saying there's a grocery store with Country Crock right up the street, and Arsene Wenger isn't going there.
No, well, he's going there, and he's trying to pay 50 cents for a $3 thing of Country Crock.
You know what I'm going to say? If there's any Amish people listening to this podcast, I'm calling bullshit on their Amishness. Isn't the whole point of them not to be connected to technology and electronics?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about offending somebody straight to their face. I'm worried about somebody who knows an Amish person, you know, getting word to them by carrier pigeon or something that I have said this, and then, you know, coming to my home. So, you know, maybe we'll edit this out and post, you know, post, or maybe we won't. But anyway, yeah, Arsene says there's two separate transfer windows, I think he said last week. And there are. I mean, there's the one that everybody else is participating in, and then there's the one that he's in. And it just seems like the only players that we bring in, for the most part, are either people who are displaced by other, you know, world class people coming in, such as Ozil or Sanchez, or people picked off of teams who really had no choice but to sell or raise money, which is kind of what I think the beginning of how Xhaka came to be was. It certainly was how we got Santi Cazorla from Malaga.
Well, and so here's what I don't get. So obviously there aren't funds available, or we would have done our business. But here's some quotes that I found from Ivan Gazidis. In 2012, he said, "As we look to the next 2 to 3 years, we will have an outstanding platform on which to compete with any club in the world." And he's talking about finances. In 2013, "This is the year we are beginning to see something we have been planning for some time, which is the escalation in our financial firepower. It means we can look at some options that weren't really in our financial capability in the past." Now, this is what he said 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. "We can't afford to outgun competitors that have far more money to splurge on transfer fees than we do." So I don't understand why they just don't come forward and say, "Hey, we don't have all this money in the bank. Kroenke's using it to fund his St. Louis or L.A. Rams deal," or whatever the fuck that is. But why doesn't Wenger just come out and say, this is it, right? I have X amount of dollars, but it's not the $200 million that everyone says I have. I know that doesn't give him any bargaining power in the window, but it relieves the stress and tension of all of us, especially those going to the Emirates who are chanting, "Spend some fucking money," after every match. It's like we've been lied to since 2012.
And well, you mean the people that are going to the Emirates and paying the highest ticket prices in the league and buying kits and expensive food and drink and pies and God knows what. I think we know that the money is there. I don't think it's that the money isn't there. I think it's that the focus is on maintaining profitability. I mean, it's a very respectable business model. It's a respectable attitude to have, to not want to waste money and throw it away and set bad precedent. It all makes sense if it was my dad or my business partner. But this is a sports team, and you know, losing and we're not losers. Finishing second, finishing third, that's not losing, but constantly underperforming what you were possibly capable of doing without giving it your best. That's, I think, why this sentiment is growing, and there's no excuse for it. And frankly, we're being fed a lot of bullshit from him in his press conferences about the reasons why. And I think the sentiment is really starting to turn.
Yeah, and that's why with it turning, I just want to hear some truth. I just want one of them to come out saying, "Hey, the liquid cash isn't there, or it is, but we're." I mean, this market's been nuts. You know, we're seeing Bolasie go for 30-plus million. I mean, that's just outrageous. But, to haggle over a player of, 5 to 6 million. I mean, Lyon were pretty obvious saying, "Hey, Arsenal came in and bid for Lacazette, and we're just not there. We're still, they bid 35 and we want 42. Is it really worth 7 million not to get a player who can bang in goals?
I think that's the misgiving and the problem with Arsene's strategy is he is so principled about the true value of a player that he's lost sight of the market value, which is dictated by the market. You're going to get left behind if you're not buying things that cost more money because you don't think that they should. And you know, everybody got more money in the TV deal. So you can't still be using 2012 valuations on 2016 players. And I could be wrong, but I think if he went in and offered, you know, they apparently offered 29 million pounds for Lacazette. If he went in and offered 35 to 37 a month ago, you probably could have had him. If you went in and offered 25 to 30 right away for Mustafi, you probably could have had him. And considering what these guys, Bolasie and others, are going for, that is market value. It's the new market value.
I'm being silent because I'm waiting for the transfer window to close before I make any judgments, especially because I feel like one of the main reasons those things might not have happened is because there was other lines out there. You know, you cast other lines out there for some bigger fish. And so I'm just hoping against hope right now that before the window closes, something will happen. And then the other thing that's really exciting for me is, you know, one of the things that we know to be true, I think, is that, you know, building the Emirates is one of the things that held back the cash for a long time. And I'm just really looking forward to that holding back Tottenham for a long time.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they're not going to have the global footprint we have. I mean, and I think that a lot of their fans know that. If you listen to TalkSport on a regular basis, they're really nervous, you know, and I feel like they're going to have to sell the Harry Kanes, the Christian Eriksens, like we did, to help fund that project. Of building that new stadium. And I kind of agree with George. You hear a lot of rumblings that Arsenal's casting some net out and looking at various players. And, you know, we wouldn't have gotten Ozil if Bale hadn't gone to Real. And so, you know, I think the biggest rumor or gossip was Lukaku goes to Chelsea, Costa goes to Atletico, Griezmann comes to us. And recently, Griezmann has said, "I'm not leaving." Costa is now playing and starring as crazy as it is. He's starring in Conte's plans. So I'm hoping that the chips fall. But man, leaving it to the last week and sacrificing 5 points. Now, granted, we may not have gotten those 5 points, but I feel like, you know, if we had a world class defender in there against Liverpool, we wouldn't have given up those 4 goals. But like George said, let's wait for a week and see what happens, and then we can discuss it on our transfer deadline day podcast.
And you know, that's all we can do. But I just, as a last word on this, I think it's pretty clear to see how differently players adjust to their teams and their countries when they come in on September 1st compared to when they come in on July 24th.
Well.
And you know, I hope against hope that we are able to fill the needs that we have and bring in high quality players. But I mean, Ozil didn't settle in that quickly right away. A lot of these other guys didn't settle in that quickly right away. Without a full preseason with your team and everything that leads up to it, I think you're hamstringing yourself. No pun intended, because none of our hamstrings appear to be in very good shape. It's October, November before you're really able to see the full team. And by that point, it can get away from you.
Totally. However, Mike, I will say, didn't Ozil, wasn't his like third touch on the ball an assist to Giroud?
Yes.
I'm sure it was, but
that's a big unit, Mike. I know you like the big units.
Yeah.
No, it's Andy that likes the big units, or the gaping holes. But
you know what? Big units and gaping holes, I don't discriminate against either.
And there is a very good chance that we may rename the podcast that, actually.
The gaping hole.
No, the big units and the gaping holes. But moving on.
So moving on, let's go prediction time. So it's super. I mean, we're in week 3 of the season, but now let's look at our predictions for who do you think will finish top 4, who do you think will get relegated. I'm going to hand this over to George. Silent George is what I'm going to call him, and I want to hear from you, George. Your top 4 and your bottom 3.
Well, just like I'm going to wait for the transfer window to close, I'm going to wait until May to make this prediction. Is that? No.
Guarantee yourself the trophy if you do that.
Yeah. I'm going to go with my bottom team. I'm going to go with Stoke. I think another one that's up near the top that I think has a good chance of getting relegated. I just feel it in my bones is our good friends at Hull City. And then let's go with Let's go with Leicester. Leicester City. Wow. From the top to the bottom. Football is all about undulation. So let's throw them in the bottom.
They started from the top and now they're here?
That's right. Somebody should make a song about that.
Yeah, seriously. You should trademark that.
I'm going to go with Arsenal number one. And then to round out the other Champions League qualifiers, I'm going to go with the cities. And I'm going to go with Spurs. I think that they once more they shall finish just close enough to us that they can sniff us. But that's it.
And when you say the cities, you mean Man City and Manchester United?
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant
the Manchesters.
The Manchesters.
Or is it Manchesties?
I did not mean
you have them relegated.
I did not mean Swansea and Manchester. I meant Man City and Man United in no particular order.
George, I love your optimism.
Mike, where are you at?
I have a completely different bottom three from George. I think despite their great escape last year, I think Sunderland is going to hit rock bottom this year. Certainly they haven't started off the season all that tremendously, but the coaching uncertainty, the FA really kind of screwed them with waiting as long as they did to pluck their manager from underneath them and give them very little time to react to that. And I think they're going down, and they might have to wave to Newcastle going the opposite direction, although that hasn't exactly started off very well either. I think another team that kind of came out of the gates last year and did a lot better than people would have expected is Bournemouth, and I just don't see it continuing this season. I think they're probably going down along with Sunderland, and the team that's been in the Premier League for a while and I think just doesn't have what it takes to stay up this season is Swansea. I think they're going to fall off pretty significantly this year. I don't know what happened to Gomis, who is in my top five Bafatembis of the entire world. he hasn't scored. He hasn't gotten a chance to do that ridiculous goal celebration since like a year ago November. So it's ridiculous. They're going down. And I do think there will be two teams that will just narrowly escape, and I think it's going to be Crystal Palace and Southampton. These are teams that kind of came out of the gates pretty strong last year, and Southampton just lost too many pieces. Wanyama, Schneiderlin, Mane, the coach, Koeman, and Graziano Pelle, I mean, they're all gone, and I don't see them competing.
Mike, Crystal Palace, really?
Crystal Palace, I hate to say it, I have a little place in my heart for Selhurst Park and Crystal Palace, but, I mean, are they going to win more than one game in the entire calendar year, or what's going on there? I think they're going to escape, but only just. Okay. And as for my top four, I think the City is going to win, not the cities, but Man City is going to take the Premier League this season, because Pep Guardiola just doesn't finish second. United will finish second. Chelsea in third. I think Conte is exactly what they needed. I hate that they hired him. It was either him or Simeone, and they got either way. They couldn't have gone wrong. And I have to put Arsenal in fourth just because I'm like legally required to do that, and morally and emotionally required to do that. So I think we will just pip out Liverpool and Tottenham for the fourth spot again this year. Andy.
And, you know, I have to apologize for my dog barking in the background. He got really upset that Mike didn't put Arsenal in first place. He is aptly named Gunnar. And he felt the negative energy coming. So God knows what he's going to do when I give you my top four. I have City in first. I think that they've brought in the right team. Pep had enough time to build that team out. Naming him so early in the process sucked for Pellegrini, but it gave him an opportunity to build out what he wanted. And so, you know, there's Aguero, Nolito. I mean, they just have some depth there. So I have them in first. I have Chelsea in second. And my reason there is just Conte is Italian. Give them a one-goal lead, and it's going to be tough to break them down. I have us in third. I hope I'm wrong. If we do sign one or two players, I think that we're there. But our injuries, we just lack so much depth. And then I have United or Liverpool fighting for that fourth. I think Klopp has done some really good work in the transfer window, shedding some of the weight that Rodgers brought in. And I just, you know, he's a tactical genius, and I just see him really, really going after it. So I have United and Liverpool fighting for that fourth place. For me, going down, I echo Mike. I think Sunderland have just been playing with fire for too long, and I see them going down. And the other two teams I have, in no particular order, but I just don't see Burnley staying up, and I don't see Borough staying up. I do think Middlesbrough will go down. I think they've made some good signings. You know, Negredo, Valdez, they've taken a couple players on loan. I just, you know, those guys are old. This is a hell of a league to play in. I just don't see them staying up, so those are my three going down.
You guys have no risk, the bottom.
I disagree completely with Mike on the Crystal Palace thing. I just, they just, I mean, yeah. There's a gaping.
I love me some Palace. It hurts to say that. I do love me some Palace, but you know, they're just kind of. I mean, is Benteke going to save them? I'm not so sure. And if he doesn't, they basically traded away Bolasie to replace him with Benteke money wise. You know, and I fear for them. Although they do have one of my favorite all time Premier League players in Jason Puncheon, and some people know why. And I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I will say, to Mike's point, Palace is the only team to yet to score a goal this young season.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. I mean, shit, that's not good. So, I mean, we're 2 weeks in, but...
why it's the way too early top four and bottom three.
Yep, way too early, and we're going to revisit that at Christmas. All right, so we have Watford... at the weekend, are we home or away for this?
It's an away game.
Okay, so we're away at Watford, basically a home match since they're so close. But I mean, we need to come out with 3 points from this, you know. And I think the players know that. The fans are going to be pissed if they don't. But one kind of cool thing, you know, I saw on Twitter some of the people that I follow back home that are friends and. They were getting up at outrageous times during the night and in the early mornings to watch those to watch Arsenal play. And a couple of them even commented, like, for the global gooners around the world who have to wake up at stupid hours to watch the club play, fair respect. And I don't think a lot of Arsenal fans in England really understand how big they are globally. But for me, it's an 8 a.m. kickoff, which is actually not a bad time. So I'll probably leave my house at 7:15 in the morning to get down to the Three Lions where the Denver Gooners meet to watch the match. But for you two, it's a 10 a.m. kickoff.
Perfect.
We'll be sleeping in.
Yeah.
Kicking feet up.
Yeah, you're lucky. And then... for our California Gooners,
we need those 3 points.
We do. We need them.
I mean, there's a 2 week break, an international break after this, the closing of the transfer window, the opportunity for all of our international players to come up with fresh injuries. So, I mean, we need to be sitting at 4 points at the end of this game, and probably that puts us in, you know, ninth in the table, depending on what kind of victory it would be, and. I mean, that's about the only way we exit August with anything other than a whole lot of bad feelings.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully we don't win 8-0 and then all of a sudden Wenger says we don't need to sign anybody, but a win is essential. I mean, there's just no two ways about it.
No two ways. So, guys, I think that's that covers our first podcast, and so... For if this even makes its way onto iTunes or wherever, thank you to whoever downloaded it. And we will be back in a couple days or in a week at least to review that Watford match. So, George, Mike, it's been a pleasure. Thank you guys so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Watford's outscored Leicester.
Come on, you Gooners.